Hello, Rob here. This is the latest episode of Press X to migrate from the YouTube channel over to podcast apps, all the good podcast apps. This is a video games podcast from The Geek Show. And in these episodes I've been doing recently, it's been two parts. Two YouTube videos converted into one podcast, and I am here to explain that fact. But this time, it's three, because it doesn't really make sense to have three Press X, messing all of the acronyms up here, three E3, no wonder I tripped over that, episodes, and then put two of them together, and then put two in the next episode, sort of breaking them up, so it has to all go together, really. But if you made your way through that rambling introduction, I think I've got a sort of a handoff to myself and to other Rob. For the first of three parts, I think the first one was Microsoft, the second one was everybody, and the third one is the PC exclusive show, or PC show. Not some of the stuff isn't exclusive. Regardless, it's a long time ago that this was actually out, so do sit back and check out what we had to say and what we had to pick. So it'd be an interesting archive looking back at what's come, what's been delayed, and you know, all these sorts of things, removed from it being current and relevant.
Hi everyone, I'm Rob.
And I'm also Rob.
And today here on PressX, we've got a special E3 discussion. We're going to be talking about the Microsoft conference. We'll talk about the other things in a separate show. But today we're only going to be focusing on the Microsoft conference, and we have to start with the elephant in the room, Project Scarlet. So Rob, what do you think?
Well, they do this with a lot of their announcements, don't they? They have, especially with the Xbox One X a few years ago, and like a little promotional video where they had lots of the development team on it saying it means this for gaming and that for gaming. And as far as I can tell, what it sort of all based around was the idea that it's going to have an SSD, which seems to be the done thing for this next generation of consoles, which is cool because that increases load times and stability of the hardware a great deal. Hard drives tend to be the things that go kapoof, and disk tray drives, but hard drives, yeah. And the other bit was sort of the portability, taking a little bit of a step into Google Stadia's area. And since Google Stadia did their little announcement video and it turns out they were rubbish, this is an interesting thing for Microsoft to take a stand with.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of on, you remember how you were with Google Stadia, how you were a bit standoffish with Google Stadia and a bit skeptical?
A bit standoffish because there was so little information.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I've had that little conference 25-minute thing.
I know.
Google Stadia is rubbish.
The thing is, I'm kind of the same right now with Project Scarlet. I'm a little bit standoffish and a little bit skeptical. The reason why was when they were going into technical detail. And basically, they worked in partnership with AMD to develop this processor, and they're using high bandwidth GDDR6 RAM. Okay. Now, that to a lot of people is basically just words and letters, right?
Yes.
But to the more technical people, the state of RAM right now, GDDR6, is not the highest level. And for a new console, I would have assumed they would have gone for like the highest level. One of the things that I was looking at and thinking about when they were talking about the processor, they developed this processor in association with AMD, and I thought, hang on, AMD are actually doing amazing things with processors, because Linus Tech Tips did a video recently about some of the amazing stuff that AMD are doing and how they're basically knocking it out of the park and leaving Intel in the dust. In terms of the stuff they're developing for PC. I thought, well, why would you get then a Project Scarlet when by the time it comes out, you could have a gaming PC that would basically crap all over whatever the Xbox is called at that point?
That's basically irrelevant, though, isn't it?
But that's the thing.
It's basically irrelevant. That's how games has always been. People who are chasing after the horizon and want the highest tech and the highest spec will be in the PC market, and they're constantly be upgrading the console.
Yeah.
And the machine, sorry. Whereas the console market is something which is future-proof and will last a number of years and will still look pretty good.
But then,
if you say this is rubbish because that's better, you're
basically I'm not saying it's rubbish. I'm just saying I'm skeptical because they're not going for the highest level of hardware that's available now. Do you see what I mean?
Maybe not. There's two versions, though, isn't there? There's Project Scarlet and there's Project Anaconda. Anaconda's the high-spec one, whereas... Yeah. I'm assuming Scarlet is more the broad...
General consumer one. The other things as well, though, the 120 frames per second 8K resolution. Now, your eyes can only see...
That's like that test with the PlayStation 5, though, isn't it? I mean, the test of Spider-Man on a PS5 dev kit or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And on the PlayStation 4 Pro, it took 8 seconds. On the PlayStation 5 kit, it was like 0.8 seconds. You're testing like next generation equipment on previous generation software.
Yeah.
So you can get these results which make it look like a really big deal when in reality it's not going to be that. So
yeah,
you can skew the data to make it look better than it actually is.
It's basically the old marketing trick, you know, when they say, oh yeah, the prices start from £99. Like, yeah, you're selling one for £99. The rest of them are going to be like £250. But because you've sold that one for £99, you've satisfied the law with regards to that price, marketing it at that price.
If you speak marketingese, basically it's going to be faster and it's going to be more graphically competent. That's basically it. So they're just using tech words to bamboozle and marketing spiel to bamboozle.
Yeah. That's basically all it was. I'll be honest, I think it's going to be a step up, but right now, it just feels like they're too focused on the console market to see the forest for the trees.
Well, personally, I don't think specs matter.
See, that's the thing. I don't think...
No, let me finish. I don't think specs matter because if you have the highest specs in the world but have no games, what's the point?
Yeah, that's the other thing that I was going to say, because they've got the Game Pass for PC now, right? And they've put 100 games on the Game Pass for PC. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then they've got the Game Pass Ultimate. So that's going to encourage a lot more PC players to basically go and get the Xbox Game Pass. Yeah?
Hmm.
But then that... You remember we were talking about splitting your audience? If you're...
I wouldn't say splitting your audience in this case because they're not the same audience.
Well, that's the thing. They're not the same audience, but eventually there might be. How many homes have a computer?
Compared to what they used to, I don't think anywhere near as many.
How many homes have a games console, an Xbox?
More. Well, not an Xbox, like a console, a non-denominational console.
Yeah, non-denominational console, most of them. But how many of them?
At least 50% have a console.
Yeah, how many of them have an Xbox as opposed to how many have a PC?
I don't know.
See, my point with this is, here I've got a PlayStation 4, right? And I was thinking about getting an Xbox One, right? I was thinking about it seriously. But then they release the Game Pass for PC, and then I'm thinking, well, hang on, what's the point of me getting an Xbox when I can just basically, when eventually all the games will be available on PC for me? So there's no point in getting an Xbox.
You're getting into you're getting into a situation of what can people afford there, and that's not really what we're here to talk about today.
I know, but what I'm saying is it just feels like the Game Pass for PC is, it's a step in the right direction, but also a step in the wrong direction. It depends on how they play it. You know, leaving the hardware to one side, because we'll find out more details about the hardware at some point. Right now is just one of those, look, we're doing this presentations, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of talking heads, I'll be honest. It wasn't the lavish presentation I expected it to be, but
this year with Sony not being there, the reason why we're doing a Microsoft video instead of a Sony and Microsoft video,
yeah,
is because Sony aren't present this year.
Yes.
So the reason why we're doing this one is because it's basically Microsoft's flaw to basically knock it out of the park.
Yeah, and in some parts they did. Keanu, I thought, was a nice touch.
I was a little bit disappointed when it revealed that he was going to be in Cyberpunk 2077, because it feels like a little bit pop culture pandering, but that's just my opinion.
It is pop culture pandering, but I mean, at the moment, Keanu is the flavour of the month, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
And weirdly enough, he kind of fits with Cyberpunk 2077, because when you look at the movies he's done, aside from The Matrix, he also did Johnny Mnemonic. But Cyberpunk 2077, what do you think?
It always looked excellent.
Yeah.
I don't think it looks quite as vital. I know this is like a really picky thing, but with the male lead, it looks a little bit more anonymous.
Yeah.
Whereas with the female lead, I felt like there was a bit... I'm not going to get into what that, the implications of all that, but I think in that sort of story and the gameplay that the featured last year's E3, it just felt more alive, more vital. The character just felt, the dynamic between the two leads felt a little bit more important.
Yeah, one of the things that I kind of liked about the Cyberpunk announcement was just the pop that CD Projekt Red got.
Yeah, they got a massive pop CD Projekt Red.
It does highlight just how much people are anticipating Cyberpunk 2077, doesn't it?
Well, I'm still looking forward to it. I just think, I don't know, the male lead was very generic that they used.
Yeah, I agree. It was very generic. But let's look at some of the other games then from the Xbox conference. There were quite a few indie games, but there's one that I do want to focus on in particular, just right at the beginning here, and that was the return, kind of, I suppose, but the return of Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yeah, I didn't know where they were going with that. That was it's something that only they can do. I don't know, not discounting the Microsoft name, but in the console space, nobody else really has interest in that.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, it's been pretty much absent for a while, hasn't it?
I can't remember the last time it was around.
Do you see what I mean? And then suddenly, out of the blue, they announced Microsoft Flight Simulator. And yeah, I know that now it's going to be so much more advanced. And it's going to attract all of those aviation fans. And if it's out on Xbox, I mean, and it's pretty much guaranteed it'll be out on PC. But if it's out on Xbox as well, that to me is a console seller.
Yeah, because the thing about console exclusives is... In the case of Sony, the console exclusives are good.
Yeah.
But only targeting one audience.
Yeah, exactly. But
This is something else. This is something else entirely.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of simulation things around, but none of them are console sellers. Flight Simulator is. Flight Simulator was the reason why so many people bought PCs back in the day, you know, when it was the big thing.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to focus on. But there were a lot of interesting games. We got a look at Bleeding Edge.
Which I was disappointed in.
Yeah.
I always felt this Ninja Theory were a narrative-driven game studio. And this one seems to be entering the Battle Royale market, which is a hot topic, a hot button for gaming right now. And I didn't think Ninja Theory were the sort of studio that got involved in hot buttons and hot topics.
Yeah, I mean, it's the 4v4 melee combat. And I was just kind of, yeah, no.
Very good stylistically, but actually what the game is, not interested in the slightest.
I'll be honest, my first glimpse of Bleeding Edge, I thought it's a little bit Jet Set Radio in terms of its style. It's a little bit Borderlands in terms of its style. Kind of a combination of the two. Do you see what I mean?
I'll tell you which one compelled me. It was an indie game. I can't recall the title, but it was a 2D one where you basically built a little village and you dealt with like kind of a little bit Animal Crossing, a little bit
Spiritfarer.
Yeah,
it was lovely. That one. I've got that on my list actually. That one was one that really caught my attention when it was saying, you know, you learn how to do this and how to say goodbye.
It just, I think that's the thing which games like. Well, Spiritfarer and other sort of indie touchstones. It's something which is underrated. It's just a game to relax to. And
yeah.
That just looked, and the art style looked like it was something from like Tom Moore or Song of the Sea or something like that. Yeah. Which is gorgeous.
I'll tell you, there were some indie games there that really got my attention, more so than the AAA games. And this is something that's an ongoing thing with me and you, isn't it?
That's the thing that you say. And in Microsoft, they've really been a champion for indie games. Yeah. Say what you will about how they've pushed what aspect of gaming they have in the past. They've always stood by indie gaming.
Yeah. A couple of them. That RPG Time, The Legend of Wright,
I think that might be a bit hard to grasp because everything would just sort of bled in. It might need some sort of accents on certain parts of the game, but other than that, it looked great.
It looked amazing. The art style was superb. Do you remember that Media Molecule game, Tearaway, on the PS Vita? The art style was a little bit like that, but with the pencil sketching and everything like that, it was beautiful. Another one that caught my attention as well was the one about the guy in the room, 12 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't know where that was going. I thought, oh, here we go. It's going to be a David Cage snooze fest.
Yeah, but it wasn't, but no. Was it? I mean, no. It's basically the type of game that David Cage should have been making if he was making games.
Yeah, David Cage is a failed movie maker rather than a games developer.
Another one of the indie games that caught my attention was Way to the Woods.
Which one was that again?
You know the one by Anthony Tan? It's the one with the beard.
The animals, yeah.
That one, I thought, that's just a beautiful looking game.
I can see it being a tad derivative, but yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, they're all going to be a tad derivative. They're all going to be inspired by other things, but it's just those ones in particular caught my attention just because of the simplicity, or because of the concept behind it, or because of just the fact that they looked great.
Yeah,
you know. But other games, The Outer Planets. What do you think?
The Outer Planets? You mean The Outer Worlds?
Was it The Outer Worlds? Sorry, yeah, The Outer Worlds.
From Obsidian.
Yeah.
It looks like a mashup of Mass Effect and Fallout that I'm actually interested in. Mass Effect, Fallout, and Borderlands, sort of like a mashing of the three into something which is a bit more story-driven, a little bit more humorous. Not in the way that Borderlands thinks it's funny, in the sense of a game actually being funny.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Which naturally leads us on to Borderlands.
Which I think the behavior of Randy Pitchford makes me think I'm not really willing to support him or his endeavor.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he was always kind of a douche, but he's really gone into overdrive now, which I don't think he understands what promotion means.
Yeah.
Bless him. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's not really moved on in any great way or shapes. It's just the same, but more of it.
They announced Double Fine joined Microsoft Game Studios, and
that's basically confirmed me getting an Xbox then.
Yeah. Psychonauts 2.
Yeah, that'll do me.
Yeah.
It wasn't a particularly good trailer.
It wasn't a great trailer, but I mean, I'll be honest, there were certain titles that they announced for the Xbox, and if they're timed exclusives, okay, fine. But if they're just exclusive on the Xbox and no other console, I would buy an Xbox just to play them.
Yeah. But that guy who says world exclusive certainly got a lot of paychecks at that conference.
Yeah, well, I mean, the titles that would make me buy an Xbox console, right? Psychonauts 2, Tales of Arise, because I am a big Tales fan, right? But the biggest one of all for me, and the one that I have been wanting to play for so long, and I've been waiting patiently for somebody to bring it to the West, Phantasy Star Online 2.
Yeah, that was it didn't really get much of a reaction. And I thought, hang on, this is like a major, major coup for, Microsoft does.
Yeah, I know. And I was just like, this should be getting the same pop as CD Projekt Red, but it's not. And I think it's because a lot of people have forgotten just how important Phantasy Star is in terms of MMOs, online MMOs in particular.
There's no other type of MMOs, but it looked fantastic, in this new sort of spec. And their new game, what was it, Crossfire X? I thought, oh, they're doing a military shooter.
Yeah.
But if you watch the gameplay, it's also very silly and over the top and exaggerated.
Yep.
So it's fine, I think. If you keep those sort of core values in a game like that, it's fine.
Yep, I agree. The other one that they announced, though, there was only one other one that caught my attention. Because obviously there's a Dragon Ball announcement, but there's always a Dragon Ball announcement, so I'm not even going
to
bother.
It won't be allowed to die.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother talking about Dragon Ball. But the other one that they announced was a collaboration, the story collaboration between, I forgot his name, Hideo something Miyazaki and George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, I think people will have been disappointed that it wasn't a Game of Thrones thing.
Yeah, but it's called Elden Ring.
Poor title, I think.
I don't know. I was a bit surprised by just what sort of concept they were going for, and the whole beginning bit with the thing holding the hand and all the arms and stuff like that gave it a very horror-ish vibe. And I'm hoping it is a fantasy horror type thing, because we don't really see a lot of those
Miyazaki, the game Miyazaki, the From Software Miyazaki.
Yeah.
That's kind of what his raison d'etre is, isn't it?
Yeah. And I know that people will cite Dark Souls and Bloodborne and games like that, but those aren't really scary. When I say fantasy horror, I mean something that is actually, it has the atmosphere of the better Resident Evil or Silent Hill games or the Fatal Frame games.
Yeah, I think the fear with those games come from the fact that dying is so annoying and you don't want to do it.
Well, I don't know, sometimes in some of those games, Fatal Frame 2, for example.
No, I mean, in the case of those Dark Souls-style games,
that's
the thing that where the fear comes from, mate. I really hate having to do things over and over again.
Yeah, but I mean, when I say a fantasy horror, I want something that is fantasy and scary.
Well, maybe. Maybe this will be it, maybe it won't. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
The platform was there for Microsoft to really knock it out of the park, and I don't think they did.
Yeah, it felt like they pulled back a little bit. I mean, they announced stuff like the new LEGO expansion for Forza, which I wasn't really, well, Forza Horizon 4, I should say. I wasn't really sold on that. I was like, yeah, okay, why?
They put a lot of value of the conference into Gears 5, which does look good, don't get me wrong, yeah. But maybe a bit too much time.
I mean, the Blair Witch game?
Well, it's kind of trite, isn't it, for modern horror. It might be good, might well be very good, but that sort of hiding and using the camera, sort of Outlast-style horror, become a bit worn out right now.
I'll tell you what, LEGO got a good outing at the Microsoft conference, because it wasn't just the Forza game. There was the whole LEGO Star Wars thing as well. The Skywalker saga, as they call it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Being too many LEGO games at this point. I mean, even without playing it, you've seen the trailer, you know exactly what it's going to be like.
Hmm.
No mystery behind those games anymore.
Nope. So, yeah, I don't know.
I've seen some of the announcements from the Bethesda. I haven't watched the Bethesda conference yet. But some of the announcements from that conference excited me more than this.
Yeah.
And I'm looking to jump ship to Microsoft Next Generation. So for me to say that, and I'm wanting to be interested.
Yeah.
It was a very going through the motions sort of conference for them.
I mean, the thing is, it just felt, I mean, especially with the, you know, coming full circle here, especially with Project Scarlet and their announcement that they launched the Xbox with Halo and they're launching the new Xbox with Halo. And then you got to see the trailer for the new Halo game. But for me, you know, Halo, okay, yeah, it sold a lot of consoles back in the day, you know?
But I think it was an announcement for a console without an announcement for a console.
Yeah, exactly. And Halo, to me, isn't a console seller now. Because
it is to some people, but...
To some people, yeah. Nostalgia fans. That's the thing. It just feels like they're doing exactly what Nintendo generally do and capitalize on people's nostalgia to sell consoles. And I think that's the wrong way to sell consoles.
Yeah. Okay. So if you have any comments about the conference or our comments on the conference, please do comment below. But until next time, which will be a lot sooner this time because it's E3, so we'll be doing two of these videos. I have been Rob.
And I've been Rob.
Thanks for watching.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
This is voice actor Bryce Papenbrook, and you're listening to the Geek Show Podcast Network.
For us geeks, the cinema is sacred. Whether it's the latest blockbuster or the arrival of the new indie darling, we wouldn't trade it in for a thing. This is Cinema Eclectica. Not only do we celebrate the new, we also champion the old, forgotten and overlooked, whether that means Czech New Wave, slashers, New Hollywood, silent films, J-horror, film noir, surrealism, Shaw Brothers, spaghetti western, social realism, 80s fantasy, or pure honest-to-God trash. Even a certain little misguided attempt at a FIFA movie or an Italian director's whacked attempt at Dracula. It's all cinema, it's all Eclectica, and we love it all equally. Subscribe to Cinema Eclectica wherever you get your podcasts from, including Acast, Audioboom and Spotify, or head over to thegeekshow.co.uk to get the full archive, where there's movies from all walks of life.
Hello and welcome to Press X, and now the second of our chitty chats about E3. Last time we did Microsoft, this time everybody else.
Well, we say
in the console space anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say in the console space. So I think we have to kick off with some sort of time sequence. So Bethesda, shall we start with them?
Well, I think EA were first.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, and I think it was like a 30-minute live stream.
Lots of
Apex Legends stuff. There was a FIFA trailer. That's it. Move on. What next?
Yeah. The weird thing is, EA's one was more like a Nintendo Direct than it was anything else.
Yeah, but the thing about Nintendo Direct is Nintendo have things to announce.
Yeah. Well,
EA says, "Oh, here's the latest iteration of all your favorite sports franchises."
Yeah, and that was basically it. I'll be honest. I didn't like the host for the EA one.
It seems like it's the latest. You know, if you've not listened to some of the other stuff that we did, and we had a podcast, The Geek Show, and on our podcast we talk about how China is doing some weird things with news readers and AIs reading the news.
Yes.
Whereas in this video, you could tell me it was an AI who was doing EA announcements, and I wouldn't bat an eyelid.
Well, I mean, all of the hosts seem to have that fake positivity and energy.
Yeah. We're not reviewing them. We're talking about games, yeah.
I know, but it just felt like when I was watching it, you could see like the smile never reached the eyes, and it was highly disturbing.
Why do they still do games? Because all they really care about is the money. They don't care about the games.
Yeah. Aside from the sports games, there wasn't anything of note. Well, even
Apex,
the sports games.
Apex Legends, like a new set of stuff for Apex Legends, but that's it.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, was it even worth having a conference for that?
No, and there was it announced in the EA conference, the new Star Wars game? Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Because it was by the studio Respawn, who were genuinely excellent, who did the very, very, very underrated Titanfall 2.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, the Star Wars game Jedi Fallen Order, is it?
Yes.
Okay, I have to admit, it looks interesting. Okay, as a Star Wars game, new character, new setup, everything like that. Fine. I'm all for adding to the Star Wars mythology. That's fine by me. But I can't get away from the fact that it's basically just another Commonwealth Garden Star Wars game.
Yeah, they could do so much more.
Yeah, and that is the one big downside. See, one of my biggest problems with the way they make Star Wars games, they keep trying to make Battlefront 2 over and over again.
And every other game, I mean, there's no guarantee this one's even going to come out because they've started with so many Star Wars games and cancelled so many Star Wars games.
Yeah. The most famous, I've forgotten the name of it. You remember the one that was a stalled project, but everyone really wanted it to happen.
Yeah, I remember. 1412 or something like
that.
Yeah,
it was something like that. What I would love is for them to really build on the whole Star Wars thing. I mean, they had, like, Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, yeah? Back in the day.
If you ain't no pod racing, I ain't interested.
Just follow me on this. They had Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy. Why the hell didn't you push that one step further and do another addition to Jedi Academy, but where you are actually a Jedi Master and you're responsible for training young Jedi, or do like a Sith Academy where you are basically a Sith Master and you have to go around looking for an apprentice.
You do know it's EA, right?
Yeah, I know. They're always doing action-based stuff. And I'm saying, put a little more thought into it.
You do know it's EA, right? Speaking of pod racing, Bethesda.
Yes. Bethesda did a lot of their usual, look, there's more stuff for Elder Scrolls.
And the flogging the dead horse, which is Fallout 76. I listened to an interesting take that basically suggested that they released that game in the alpha phase when it was so far before being ready.
Yeah.
But still, the damage has been done by releasing it in such a horrible, broken state.
Yeah, and what the hell? We're going to release it and there's going to be no human NPCs?
Yeah, you're just chasing sort of audio recordings. Terrible, terrible stuff.
Do you see what I mean?
It's the same as No Man's Sky is, and it was a bad game when it started off, but eventually it became good. Can't do stuff like that to people.
Yeah, but the thing is, if they'd basically gone down the route of, look, we're releasing this game now, it's not going to be perfect, but all of the stuff we're adding to it will be free. So if you buy it now, don't stress, right? You're not going to have to pay for anything else. We'll just basically keep piling on the stuff until it becomes perfect. You won't have to pay for anything else, right? If they'd done that, I would have said, okay, fair play.
Delayed it a year and then released it as a half-competent game that had done a lot of...
Or done what CD Projekt Red did with The Witcher 3.
Yeah. Other stuff they did, though.
Yes.
I'm disappointed that Doom Eternal's got a multiplayer mode because that was one of the things that really made that stand out. It was the first Doom was a first-person shooter which said no to multiplayer.
Yeah.
Live the story. Same with the Wolfenstein, which I'm not enamoured with it being co-op, but that's a market that's not for me, so that's fine.
Yeah, Wolfenstein, Youngblood, fine. But
I love the franchise, I love what they're doing with it, but co-op's just not for me. But there's two new games which do look like they're very much for me.
Yeah.
The first one is from Shinji Mikami's development team. I think it's Tango Orange Works.
I think so, yeah.
And that's Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yeah, and I love the look of this game.
It looks like it's sort of fantasy, Japanese folklore, monsters, and weird stuff. Doesn't really know how it's going to play, but it appears like lots of people in Japan go missing, and then monsters move in.
Basically, imagine Avengers Infinity War, the finger snap, and then people just disappearing, right?
Yeah.
That's effectively what happens, and all that's left is piles of clothes, which is fair enough. Just piles of clothes, loads of people disappearing, and you've got to try and figure out what's going on, but fight off ghosts and monsters and Oni and all sorts of other things at the same time.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it? Trailers tend to give away too much. This is a trailer. I know I chastised the Death Stranding for this exact reason, but I don't like
Hideo Kojima.
Too many Hideos. Hideo Kojima. Hideo Nakata is the director of Ring.
Yes.
Hideo Kojima. I don't like him. I do like Shinji Mikami. So I'm looking forward to what he's doing. And the fact that he's released a trailer where nothing's really revealed other than sort of what the world is, that's good.
Yeah. And that I like. My thing about Ghostwire Tokyo, somebody made the comment, I'd rather play Death Stranding. This is just budget Death Stranding. I'm like, this is done by Shinji Mikami, who made a name for himself with games long, long ago. His history with games is probably better than Hideo Kojima's.
Yeah, I mean, Shinji Mikami is basically one of the key voices responsible for making horror games remotely mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at his body of work for the games that he's worked on, which one's more impressive, Kojima or Mikami?
Mikami.
Easily.
I mean, as popular as Metal Gear Solid is, like, stealth games aren't mainstream in the slightest.
Well, not only that, Kojima's made his name through one franchise, mainly.
Yeah.
Primarily
through one franchise. This is not a Shinji Mikami versus Hideo Kojima video, because Mikami, obviously, would win, but...
Yeah, exactly. And, that we may do a video like that at some point, but...
And next up, Deathloop from Arkane Studios, who did Dishonored.
Deathloop, I like the idea of it.
You see, it looks great.
Yeah.
As in two people who are in a perpetual death loop and they have to kill each other to either keep the loop going or stop the loop happening.
Yeah.
Don't know what sort of game it's going to be. I'm scared it's going to be online heavy.
Yeah.
But given Arkane's early history, doubt it will be. But at the same time, I just don't know. But that's good, that. I mean, there's two games we talked about from Bethesda where it's given a trailer where it's shown genuine, like, you know, sort of vague idea what this is going to be. But at the same time, it reveals nothing about what they're going
to
be.
Moving on to Well, Ubisoft.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the besides hanging like the one consistent trope in an Ubisoft press conference is the dancing panda.
Yeah.
But aside from that, they had some intriguing stuff.
We're going to start off with the elephant in the room, a new Watch Dogs game, but set in London.
And the first Watch Dogs was, it was one of the biggest disappointments, frankly.
Yeah.
And the second, I never played the second Watch Dogs, although by all accounts it was better. The
second Watch
Dogs. But it was a bit too digital, bro, for me.
The thing is, the second Watch Dogs game I did play, and while it was better than the first Watch Dogs game, you're absolutely right. It was a bit too digital, bro. Oh, we're going to fight the man, you know, that sort of thing.
No, that's not it. It's just the stylization of it.
No, but that was the core message. We're going to fight the man. Why? What has the man ever done to you? Oh, we're just not happy with the man.
It's a bit too...
It was a bit too
Auckland hipster.
Yeah, it was a bit too poor-faced for my liking.
Well, I said Auckland hipster, but yeah. If you want to go with poor-faced, by all means.
Yeah, it was a bit too poor-faced for my liking. This one, on the other hand...
I've got no problems with Auckland, by the way. Yeah. I'm just using it as a town.
This Watch Dogs Legion, though, right? I am liking this because it has very strong V for Vendetta vibes.
Well, I think it could be a masterpiece. It could be too ambitious.
Yeah, but I love the idea that it's no longer just all the digital bros who are in with the technology, who are getting involved. You've got, like, the retired assassin who's basically just a granny tottering around, right, and getting the bus going to places. I love the idea of that, of anyone being involved in this resistance movement now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about GTA 5 being sort of revolutionary for having free leads.
Yeah.
And I love that this studio sort of picked it up and taken that bat on and saying, you think that's good? Eh? Well, check this out. The one thing I didn't like about this, I mean, the style is great. But yeah. It looks great. Can't wait to play it.
Yeah.
However, framing it as post-Brexit.
Yeah, that I think was a bit, it was a bit too on the nose, I think.
Yeah, you can just say it's a fantastical future in which a technocrat regime reigns over Britain. Yeah. Could you say that? You don't need to bring Brexit into it. Because I think they're being relevant, but I guarantee you, Ubisoft, people watching in the UK kind of went,
yeah, we did. I actually cringed.
I can't sort of make the sound for cringe, so we're just making a groan.
Yeah. I actually cringed, though, when they went, it's a post-Brexit Britain. I'm like, really? Why go there?
Yeah, it was embarrassing for them. I feel for Ubisoft. That done.
Yeah.
They brought it on themselves. But, oh, no.
Right,
no.
I have a question. Why does every single game that involves samurai or ninja and horror of some sort have to have the word shadows in it?
I don't know. Probably contractual obligation.
Okay. Not sure what... There's no real details at the moment about Shadows of the Hitakiri. I think that's the name.
It's one of these trailers. I looked at it and thought, this looks great. And at the end of the trailer, it said an expansion for Honor. And I thought, oh, no.
Yeah, that was the thing. Shadows of the Hitakiri, an expansion for Honor. And that at that point, I went, but you could have made a really interesting game with this setup.
Yeah, they could have. But they chose instead to do it as an expansion for... They could have used the For Honor engine and had it in the For Honor franchise, but as its own standalone thing.
Yeah. And that was a big disappointment when I saw it was for Honor.
Like a smaller game.
Yeah. I mean, one that did catch my attention, because I'll be honest, ever since Speedball, I've liked the whole future sports type thing, you know?
You're talking about Roller Champions, and it's not Speedball, it's Roller Derby.
I know it's Roller Derby, but it's not Roller Derby as we know it.
Okay. Oh, it's fantasy-ified Roller Derby.
It's a more sci-fi version of Roller Derby.
Because as I noticed, a lot of the competitors had like one robotic or cybernetic arm.
Exactly, and so it was a bit more of the roller derby that you'd see in the Battle Angel Alita movie. Because
it looks fantastic.
Angel.
You know, because you can play the same sports games over and over and over again, but at the end of the day, you're just playing the same thing over and over and over again. So having like a new sport that does a new thing. Roller derby is one of the sort of the big new breakout sports.
I saw so many people, so many comments, just dissing Ubisoft for having a sports game. I'm like, why the hell not?
And then it's people not like believe themselves to be some sort of gatekeepers where if you do sports games, they're not real games.
Can I just point out, you're not gatekeeping anything. except maybe the lavatory.
Yeah, I don't know what he's getting out of that. But game doesn't need a gatekeeper. It doesn't need any gatekeepers.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't need anybody to protect it. I'm sure these companies are big enough and strong enough and have enough lawyers to basically protect themselves. But with
all
this,
those people are doing, all the people are doing are being insufferable hipsters.
Do you know what I love about the about this Roller Champions game? What I absolutely love about it. Number one, the aesthetic. Number two, the fact that it's roller derby or futuristic roller derby. And number three, and I really hope this actually does happen. I said it to you before, I would love to see many more sports from all over the world having video games, right?
Well, there's so many sports.
There's so many sports, and there's so many odd sports as well, you know, and they never get a video game because nobody wants to do them. Nobody thinks that they're going to sell. Nobody wants to try them. Even as indie games, they don't get any attention, right? And I would love for Roller Champions to kind of just nudge that door open a bit and say, look, there's a whole wealth of sports games that are really fun and really interesting and that aren't Madden or NHL or FIFA or PES or whatever.
It just looks fun. How can people be angry about a game that looks so fun?
Yeah, exactly.
You really got to wake up and look at yourself in the mirror if you're angry that a company would make a fun game.
Yeah. And then they ended with Gods and Monsters, which really it only got my attention for the actual audio rather than the video, because the video didn't give us any information about the game. But the
it
audio
looked like Breath of the Wild, but from the developers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I think it was.
It was very cartoony as well. But I mean, just the whole thing. See, I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be a God Simulator, right?
Like, I don't know what it is. It was like 20 seconds long. There's really nothing you can take from it.
That's what I'm saying. From the audio, from the words that were said on the video, when people need help, they turn to the gods. When the gods need help, they turn to you. That made me think this is going to be a God Simulator, something like Populous or Black and White, something like that, right?
Maybe.
Basically what I'm thinking. Anyway, moving on to Squeenix.
Final Fantasy VII looks average, doesn't it? They set a release date, and it's not going to be one game. They're going to break it up into episodes or whatnot. I don't know. It looks fantastic. The graphics look absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't like this sort of MMO-like gameplay. I prefer my RPG to be turn-based.
But some people would say, you're being a hipster, Rob, for turn-based.
I'm being a traditionalist.
You're being you are the conservative gamer.
Yeah, I'm a conservative gamer because, no, you can't really. It's just all flash and fizzle and sizzle, isn't it?
Yeah, but
there's no substance to those sorts of games. I mean, I liked Final Fantasy XV enough, but
the thing about Final Fantasy VII, right? And this is the thing that's always annoyed me about Final Fantasy VII. Number one, the game is not as great as people think. Okay, the story is not as great as people think. It's just there's so many people who are enamored with Final Fantasy VII because they think it is, but the story isn't the best.
It's thematically people like it, and also because it's people's first.
Yeah, it's people's first. That's why they love it so much. But the one that actually cemented their relationship with Final Fantasy was Final Fantasy VIII,
right? Which I think is the better game.
It is a better game. It's a much more straightforward game. The story makes a lot
more
sense.
He's got a gun blade. Yeah, how can you not like that?
Here's the thing. If it was me, right? If it was me, because Final Fantasy VII has had so many games built around it. There was Crisis Core. There was that first-person shooter where you play the role of Vincent and Yuffie. There was Advent Children, the film that was made for Final Fantasy VII. And then you had all sorts of other stuff. And there's so much stuff around Final Fantasy VII. And Final Fantasy VIII, the game that actually cemented people's relationships with the franchise, is just off to one side going, what am I, chop liver? When do I get attention? And they did actually give it some attention with a remastered edition.
Was Final Fantasy IX the one with Zidane and all those weird-looking things?
Yeah.
That one was better too.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Final Fantasy VII isn't the best of the bunch. It's just, it's the one that was a lot of people's first. And as they say, you'd never forget your first.
Hmm. All right, Outriders.
I am not sure about Outriders.
It's from a Polish company, and it's great that Polish gaming is getting a real
It's getting a real boost, thanks to CD Projekt Red, and I'm happy for that.
However, it's like monsters and shooting and team shooting.
Yeah.
I don't know what else can be said in that sort of genre.
See, Outriders, Outriders is one of those games where I want to like it for the aesthetic. I want to like it for the ideas behind it, but I'm scared that it's going to be exactly the same as a dozen other games that I've played.
Yeah. Oninaki.
Yeah, Oninaki's a bit of a bizarre one. It's coming out for the PC and for the Switch as well. And the whole idea behind it is it's an action RPG. It tells the story of a Watcher, not one of the Marvel Watchers, so it's not a giant bald guy, right? Who is on a journey to protect life and death. And the reason why it got my attention is basically just for the idea of it. It looks like a kind of side-scrolling action shooter type thing. Loads of action. Side-scrolling action RPG adventure type thing where you have like melee weapons, ranged weapons, that sort of thing. But I like the idea of it mainly because it's colourful, it's bright, it's vibrant, and there is a maturity to it since it's dealing with life and death.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, Square Enix seems to be a bit... These days, they seem to be a bit too focused on core franchises. You know, the core RPG, JRPG franchise. We have to do it this way. And I'd love to see Square branch out into more things, which brings up Avengers.
What do you think? Because I might have a different opinion.
The game to beat, if they're going to do this right, they have to do it right. And there is a game to beat, right? In fact, there are two games to beat if they do an Avengers game. The first game that they need to beat is Marvel Ultimate Alliance, right? Because that still holds up as one of the finest Marvel games ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And the second game that they have to beat is Marvel Super Heroes, Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
I don't agree with that, but that's your opinion.
No, follow me on this. The reason why they have to beat that one is because it's not for the game itself, but the actual mechanics of the game. For example, when it gets to the actual flight mechanics of Iron Man, for instance, the flight mechanics for Iron Man in the Lego Marvel Superhero game were brilliant. They really felt like you were in control and you could basically fly wherever you wanted. It was the same for half the other characters, and that's what they're up against. What I'd love to see is for them to actually put the same amount of thought into how the characters are moving as... who was it who did the Spider-Man game?
Sucker Punch.
Was it Sucker Punch? Did the Spider-Man game?
I believe so, yeah.
But the developers of the Spider-Man game put a lot of thought into how Spider-Man is moving across the city, and I'd love to see them do that with the Avengers game, because that, playing the Spider-Man game, it was so much fun just swinging around the city, doing the fetch quests.
But it's positioned as a sort of Destiny, Anthem-style game, or Division, or something like that, where it's going to be online and team-based and long-term sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't like that sort of game because I'm not invested in the universe or the characters in any way, because the game themselves are so weak when it comes to the narrative and the world-building.
Yeah.
I'm invested in the characters and I'm invested in that world, so yeah. I'm much more interested and anxious to play it.
Yeah. It's Insomniac Games did the Spider-Man games.
It was either Insomniac or Sucker Punch.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I'm heavily invested in the Marvel Universe in terms of the comic books and the movies. A lot more invested than most people since I do the comic book show as well. And so for me, it's a big thing about how the characters move.
I'm interested in what characters they are, because if it's just Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, and Black Widow.
Well, Captain America won't be in it. He's apparently dead.
Eh?
He's apparently dead, isn't he?
Dead in actual words.
Yes.
Well, dead as much as dead can mean in a Marvel comic or movie or game.
You know, he's just going to be like trapped in time or in subspace or something like that, going, "Let me out."
He's dead, but he got better. That's how Marvel usually operate.
Yeah, that is exactly how Marvel operate.
So that leaves, lastly, Nintendo.
Yeah, it does. I'll be honest. Some of these ones for Nintendo, they were announced before E3, so stuff like Fire Emblem, Three Houses, and Trials of Mana, and stuff like that, they were already announced. You know, we already knew they were coming.
Yeah, No More Heroes 3 is a surprise announcement, although yeah. I don't think anybody really cares. Well, they do, obviously, it's got fans, but I think it's bought as sales.
Yeah, I mean, No More Heroes 3 is one of those ones that, it was a surprise one, but A bigger surprise for me was Panzer Dragoon.
Yeah, that
came out of left field.
It was great at the time, but I think it's shown its age to the sort of style of game that is.
Yeah. A couple of others. And there was the Contra Rogue Corps, or Rogue Corps, however you pronounce that word. That one got my attention because it's Contra for a start, and you've got a group of misfits. And it was a very kind of Borderlands-y type game.
Hopefully better than that.
There was that Daemon X Machina, which to me looked a lot like Zone of the Enders.
It did. A bit more anime than Zone of the Enders. I know it was Zone of the Enders is plenty anime. But
I was going to say, it's like ridiculously anime is Zone of the Enders.
It's very lacking in colour and dynamic range and whatever. It's just lots of blacks and dark blues.
Which is why it reminded me of the first Zone of the Enders game.
Whereas that seemed to have colour. Daemon X Machina had colour. Yeah. More than two as well.
Yeah, well, it had the oranges and stuff like that. Initially, when I looked at it, I thought it was going to be Zone of the Enders' second runner.
And last up is Astral Chain.
Which, again, is a very so anime it hurts type game. In terms of the base concept, you are connected to something with an astral chain, which allows you to move and conduct combat in certain ways. And do you know the weird thing, right? I was getting very strong Final Fantasy 15 vibes from the combat.
Well, maybe. I mean, it seemed to be doing what Nier Automata did in the sense of it changing what type of gameplay it had depending on the level.
I think that's something that we'll see a lot more of in future games, what Nier Automata did.
I hope so.
Because it does add to the game. It doesn't really detract unless it's done badly.
Just as long as there's none of the creepy fan service of the Nier Automata.
Yeah, we could do without that. After all the conferences and stuff like that, there is like the show floor, and there were some other things that got our attention.
Control looks fabulous. Can't wait for that to be released.
Although I will say it is basically just another Star Wars Jedi game.
Couldn't care less. It's the story that these studios are known for.
Yeah, it's the story that you're playing it for, but in terms of the actual gameplay, it's a Star Wars Jedi game just in casual clothes. You know, it's Casual Friday. Casual Friday Star Wars, I'm going to call it.
Sure, Rob. Sure. Oddworld Soulstorm. That was an odd it was a surprising announcement.
Yeah, I am all for more Oddworld. I don't know, how do you feel about Oddworld? I love the whole idea of Oddworld from the get-go. I love Oddworld Abe's Odyssey and Abe's Exodus. I loved Stranger's Wrath. I loved Muncher's Odyssey, and I loved the remake of Abe's Odyssey as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, but I think it needs to move the gameplay forward in interesting ways rather than just being, it was good before, it's good again.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do think they need to move the gameplay forward in interesting ways. One that was a surprise for me, one that may please fans of 2D fighters, was Samurai Showdown, which in Japan is called Samurai Spirits, if I remember rightly. But that was a surprise because that's been off the radar for a long time.
I'm not sold because it's a 2D fighter and I'm the least interested person in them.
I mean, it's been a long time since the last Samurai Showdown game. The last actual Samurai Showdown game was Edge of Destiny in 2008. And then they did like the Anthology Collection in 2009 for the PSP and the PS2. And that was it. And it's been off the radar for 10 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah, for a 2D beat-em-up, usually they bring them back after a bit, don't they?
Bring back Onimusha, that's my hint, that's my lesson from that.
Yeah. Anyway, there were a few others that got our attention. Scavengers looks interesting. Creatures in the Well, it's got art and design inspired by Mike Mignola, and that immediately, you know, I'm looking at that and going, okay, I want to have a look at this game in more detail because Mike Mignola, Hellboy, I'm a big fan. Journey to the Savage Planet, that looked a lot of fun.
Odd title.
Yeah, it's an odd title, but I have to say, you remember with the Microsoft conference, we mentioned The Outer Worlds?
Yes.
Journey to the Savage Planet is more the type of game that I'd play than The Outer Worlds.
Well, that's fine. Not everybody can like everything.
There was more trying. The fourth trying game, how many more trying games do we need?
All of them.
I will admit, the trying games are colourful and they look like a lot of fun. And at some point, I will get around playing them.
I played the first one and I feel that was enough.
Yeah, The thing that I found odd, after all of the push over the years for VR gaming, there were not many VR announcements. Two that caught my attention, Lone Echo. There was a sequel to Lone Echo announced, but the one that really kind of made me think, you know, I may just borrow someone's VR kit to play this, because I'm really interested in how it works, was Phantom Covert Ops, which is stealth kayak action.
And I think on that, we call this video to an end.
I mean, stealth kayak action is just...
You can't follow that.
There's a combination of words I never thought I'd say.
You just can't follow it. It's impossible. Thank you for watching this episode of Press X. Put your comments below if there's any other announcements from any other conference or thing
that
got your attention. But we will be back with a third Press X for E3.
Yeah.
Talking about PC stuff.
We're giving the PC some love this year.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hey everybody, this is Billy West from Futurama. Hi, how you doing?
I hope you're doing lousy, because I'm doing lousy. And I don't want anybody to be happy if I'm not happy. Now get me a sandwich with maggots on it.
Hi, this is Zeb Brannigan. You're listening to The Geek Show.
Thanks for checking out one of the podcasts in our merry little family. We really do appreciate it. Podcasts aren't all we do. We're also making strides into the world of video. If you like what you've heard and want more, then head on over to YouTube and search for The Geek Show. On our channel, we have video game and low-budget tech reviews, video game chatter in Press X, animation discussions in Keyframe, movie visual essays in Shortcuts, needlessly nerdy lists with Listomania, interviews from our travels, and much, much more. The future's bright. And who knows what else it holds. So don't forget to search for The Geek Show, subscribe, and click that notification bell to stay up to date.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Press X, and we're in the final video of our E3 coverage. We're talking about PC games. Yay!
Yes, PC games. Gaming's for the computer.
Yes. Well,
you know what I'm talking about.
See, here's the thing, right? The PC gaming show happened, and there's the Kind of Funny Games showcase as well, which had loads and loads of indie games, far too many to list in this video. So if you do want to find out...
It was by Kind of Funny, but there we go.
Yeah, but there were a lot of indie games that they went over, and I, for one, was really happy about some of the indie games. I'm not a big fan of all indie games because I have a brain and common sense. I can't be a fan of everything. There's some things I just
don't like. Some games are indie for a reason.
Yeah.
Some games aren't.
Yes, exactly. But the PC Games Conference, which a lot of people are dubbing the Epic Games Conference because it was sponsored by Epic, even though it was organized by PC Gamer, it was sponsored by Epic, and you had a lot of Epic Games exclusives on it.
Well, there's lots of Epic Games platform that's sort of trying to muscle in on Steam, but that's a different story.
Yeah. There are good things and bad things about the Epic Games platform. Not going there. Different video entirely. Yeah?
Yeah.
A couple of big titles to start off with. I think the biggest titles to start off with have to start off with Baldur's Gate 3.
That was announced previously in Google Stadia's very, 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 very dog dirt conference, I guess, thing.
We had a video, we had like a cutscene to work with, but they have confirmed, the developers of Baldur's Gate 3, but they have confirmed that they're going to take the time with the game. They're going to take the time developing the game. They know it's a big IP. It's a massive IP. Baldur's Gate is one of the RPGs, you know?
Yeah.
If you're talking about Western RPGs, it's what I call foundation
I think Founding Fathers would be one of the a better term for it, because
I don't like the term Founding Fathers because it's a bit too Americanism for me. I like Foundation rather than Founding Fathers. I'd treat it as more of a Foundation game.
You see, this is the sort of thing where if I had a handbag and this was in person, I'd hold up my handbag and go, ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there we go.
Well, you do have a handbag.
It's a small bag, not a handbag. Anyway, games.
Yeah, but Baldur's Gate 3, the Baldur's Gate games led to Neverwinter Nights and all the rest of the D&D games eventually. It basically built on a lot of stuff and basically laid the groundwork for most of the isometric top-down RPGs that came after.
Indeed did. Shenmue was another big one, which is a surprise to see there.
Yeah. The weird thing is, I know a lot of people are criticizing Shenmue because the PC version, even though it was a Kickstarter, the PC version has been snapped up by Epic Games for their platform, right?
People were annoyed because it was a Kickstarter game that was also financed by PlayStation. It's also financed by Epic.
Yeah, and that is where I kind of went, hang on, why are you annoyed? Epic also donated a lot of money to getting the game made. So,
but regardless, it looks like Shenmue. I think that's as much as you can really say.
Well, it looks like an early PS3 game.
I won't be that harsh. It does look pretty good. I feel like it's an artifact in a lot of ways. Shenmue. The story was great, but the gameplay was a bit crunky.
Yeah.
So I feel like for the look of it is fine, but they really need to sort of evolve and make it a bit more 21st century in the good ways, not the bad ways.
See, for me, I know that some people are criticising the aesthetic, saying they're trying a bit too hard to make it look as though it's a follow-on from Shenmue 2. I actually applaud Yu Suzuki for doing that because it adds a degree of continuity in terms of the visuals. Maybe this is how it would have looked if it came out on the PlayStation 2 or in the early days of the PlayStation 3. You see what I mean?
So maybe.
I do agree with you, though, on the gameplay side of things, because Shenmue was very slow in a lot of ways. I mean, you had the turning circle of a barge, for crying out loud, when you were running.
Yeah, Yakuza picked up that baton and made that game engine a lot better.
And what I would love to see is if they basically used the Yakuza engine for the core gameplay aspects of Shenmue.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, and hope that's what they've done. Another big title for the PC, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2.
I feel like I need to have a sit-down chat with the developers of that and tell them, your game looks great, yeah, but the title's terrible.
Well, it's based on the Vampire the Masquerade tabletop RPG, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but it's too long. It's got 3 titles, that game.
Yeah, I know.
It's pretty bad. It look on a more real level, though. That game from last year, or whenever it was, from Focus Home Entertainment, Vampire, looked great, but it didn't really deliver at the end of the day, whereas this,
it looks like
the game that promised to be.
Well, they have to kind of deliver with Vampire the Masquerade because it has such a big fan following. The original Bloodlines game is a really good game, okay? I have it, and I played it to death, and I love that game. I think it's an amazing game for its time, and I'm really hoping they've basically recaptured all of the magic of the original Bloodlines game, but built on it and made it better and bigger. In the same way that I hope they build on everything that Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 and Sword Coast and the expansions and Neverwinter Nights did for Baldur's Gate 3. I'm hoping it's bigger, better, badder, you know.
It just looks cool.
Yeah.
I can't really say anything else. It looks cool and it looks interesting.
Yeah, which leads us to, well, there aren't enough games where you play the bad guy for my liking.
Yeah, they tend to kind of be goofy when they do that.
Yeah, and yes, Evil Genius was goofy. It was basically, you remember Dungeon Keeper? It's basically Tower Defense, but Tower Defense done right. Because you remember Dungeon Keeper back in the day, where you basically had to excavate and create this dungeon? It was one of those Peter Molyneux games, if I remember rightly. It was a Bullfrog game. Evil Genius is basically that type of game. You have your island lair, and you have to build up your island lair and hire henchmen and stuff like that. But now you've got Evil Genius 2, which was announced, World Domination. And, oh, I am so happy, because I loved the original Evil Genius. You know when you watch, say, the original Austin Powers, or you watch one of the better James Bond movies, or a really good spy movie where you have a really good bad guy?
Yeah.
Right. Evil Genius just makes you feel like all of the good ones, all of the good bad guys, and a little bit of Dr. Evil as well.
Yeah, you never go into video games PR because you did not sell that at all.
See, that's the thing. It's difficult to explain just how satisfying it is to build... Okay, all people at some point in their life want a secret island lair or a secret volcano lair or something like that. They basically want a secret lair, right?
Yeah.
And Evil Genius is one of those games where you have your secret lair and you can basically trick it out in any way you want. When the spies and the heroes come to try and take you down, you basically just sit back and watch as your traps get rid of them, or your henchmen get rid of them, or somehow you get rid of them. And it's kind of satisfying. It's kind of satisfying.
Let's move away from those unresolved issues in your brain to another video game.
I will have you know, when I played the original Evil Genius game, I wore a Napoleon hat. I didn't really.
Yeah, because I don't think I could be on anything. I think I'd have to leave if you did. I don't think I could bear the shame.
Anyway. Yeah. Moving on.
El Hijo, was it?
Is it El Hijo or El Hijo? I think it's El Hijo.
That one. Yeah, it was... it's nice to see things have like that Mexican flavour, because before, I'd say Guacamole.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever seeing a Mexican-themed game.
This caught my attention because... it's a spaghetti western style stealth action game.
You play a child.
Yeah, and you have to basically escape the monastery and head out to try and find your mum.
Or sister. She seems a bit young to be a mum.
Oh.
I assumed it was sister, but regardless, you have to find someone.
I understood it as mother rather than sister.
Well, I'm clearly an idiot. No.
Yeah, a farmer and her son are attacked by bandits who raise their farm to the ground. The mother decides to leave El Hijo at a secluded monastery.
Well, I'm clearly an idiot. Right, moving on. Something a bit more graspable.
Yeah, but the aesthetic for El Hijo, it looks so good, doesn't it?
Yeah, very painterly.
Very painterly. There was another painterly game that was announced, which was Chris Tales, right?
Yes.
And there's a lot linking... the thing is, there's more linking El Hijo and Chris Tales than people think. Chris Tales is actually by a Colombian developer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Colombian-inspired, and it's a time-travelling love letter to classic RPGs, according to one article I read about it.
That sounds intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, the game mechanics, the game looks wonderful. I mean, it reminded me of animated films like Song of the Sea, which I know you're a fan of as well.
The aesthetic level, yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah, but the other aspect of it was the past-present-future aspect. So as you're playing the game, you see how your actions affect the past and the future at the same time.
That could be difficult to manifest in the gameplay.
Well, do you know what it reminded me of? You remember you did Degrees of Separation?
I did.
It reminded me a little bit of that in a certain way, because Degrees of Separation had that split screen thing where the screen was split into kind of hot and cold.
Yeah, you couldn't be in it couldn't occupy the same space.
Yeah. And this kind of reminds me a little bit of that in terms of how it looked on the screen in the trailer we saw for it. And the game looks stunning, let's be fair. But I'm really looking forward to it. I'll be honest, I am really intrigued by the whole concept of having past, present and future on the screen at the same time.
I mean, in the Microsoft video, I said specs don't matter, you need the games.
Yeah.
And I think that extends to graphics.
Yeah.
Graphics have got to the point where you're basically at the point of photorealism, and it's for me, there's a disconnect. I don't feel like I'm playing a game when it's that photorealistic.
Yeah, but when it's something much more cartoony...
Well, not necessarily cartoony. I think art direction is far more important than hyper-reality.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's actually what I was going to say. When it's something a bit more cartoony, you rely on the art direction to basically sell the game. That's what gets people into it.
Yeah.
Well, aside from the story and the gameplay, but the art direction is important in a more cartoony game. It has to hit certain buttons in your brain.
Hmm. Also, linking there, Moons of Madness.
Yeah.
That's a link. That has stuff to do with brain and fear and monsters. It's Lovecraft in space. I don't want to oversell it. It's just Lovecraft in space.
Yeah, it's basically cosmic horror done the way cosmic horror should be. It's basically giant tentacles in space.
Yeah, in a way where it's actually allowing the game to exist rather than Alien Isolation, which was also technically cosmic horror, but I don't think it was all that good because it basically was too hard.
Yeah.
Like you saw once in Game Over. This seems like there's more to it. There's more.
Yeah. I mean, Moons of Madness, it's by Rock Pocket Games. It's Funcom publishing it. And I know Funcom, they do a fair bit of games publishing, but they don't simply choose games willy-nilly. They do have some curation going on because they like certain types of game. I know they like the horror games and they like the supernatural games. You know, they like the supernatural stories and the horror stories a lot more than they like the cute and fluffy RPG type stuff.
Yeah. I know this wasn't in the PC game, but it will be PC on the PC.
Yeah.
It was actually in a Microsoft conference, but I never talked about it on that. But Wasteland's Free, I think that was a very good trailer.
Yes. You know I'm a big fan of the Wasteland games, right?
Yeah, because for me, it looks like what the original Fallout games.
Yeah.
But now, rather than in the late early 90s, was it?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I am a massive fan of Fallout 1 and 2, which is one of the reasons why I like Fallout 3, but I wasn't a fan of Fallout 4.
Yeah, same.
But Wasteland 1 and 2 was just basically, it was everything good about Fallout all over again. Wasteland 3 is more of the same, and I am all for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Interestingly enough, that does bring up a game that caught my attention. Unexplored 2, The Wayfarer's Legacy.
Again, people really need to hire somebody who can name a game.
The reason why it got my attention is partly because of the title, I'll be honest.
It's not a great title, let's be fair.
Yeah, I know, it's not a great title, but it does conjure up certain imagery in your brain. See, I never played the original Unexplored game, but Unexplored 2, it's a roguelike action RPG, and it seems like there is a lot of area that you can explore. There's a lot of area that you can basically go through and just see what's there. And it seems like there's a lot of stuff for you to do. And I like the aesthetic of it, and I like the idea. You know how much I like the idea of just basically playing a game, an adventure game, just for the adventure, not having any specific quest to save the world. I just want to go on an adventure.
Yeah, I know that.
I'm a big fan of those sorts of games. And this seems like that sort of game on the surface.
Yeah, I'm going to change the direction here and talk about Maneater. You play a shark.
I knew that was going to get your attention.
You play a shark. Oh, I don't really think I need to say anything else. It's a shark, right? And sharks have sharp teeth, right? And you eat things with the shark.
I actually have something to say. It's basically, imagine Echo the Dolphin, but if Echo was a shark.
That would have made Echo the Dolphin so much satisfying because that game was hard.
I know.
If you just had a level, you just thought, right, I've had enough trying to platform this. This is annoying me. I'm just going to eat everything.
Yeah.
Like, that game would have been so much better.
Well, that's basically what it is, isn't it? It's Echo the Dolphin, but you are a shark.
Yeah. I mean, sharks really aren't that ferocious. They don't eat things like that.
Yeah, sharks also don't do flips in the air.
Yeah, they get a bad rap, sharks. I blame Steven Spielberg. But yeah, it looks fun.
It looks so much fun. I don't know anybody who isn't going to have fun playing a shark. I can see the joke might wear a bit thin after a bit, but...
It'd have to be a shark game.
Yeah, it'd have to be a shark game. It can't be anything like Goat Simulator where you just basically play the goat all the time.
You seen that game where you play a goose?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to play that too.
I know you do.
Just go around being an arsehole to people. That's all gooses do. Or geese, sorry.
Anyway...
Real things in games there.
Yes, real things. There was an interesting one from Krillbite Studio, Mosaic. Had an interesting art style. I'm not sure what the game is about. Basically, everything was kind of grey and everything like that, and the guy was just moving through the city, and everybody's got umbrellas, and the guy's wearing a white shirt, and then next thing, you know, there's light, and he's swimming upwards, and it just... I get the metaphor of it, but I'd really want to see what the game is like.
Genesis Noir, on the other hand.
Yeah, Genesis Noir, on the other hand, just looks like, wow.
I don't know what it looks like, but as a sort of an art direction, going back to that point again, it's the sort of thing which it allows a game to stand out because everything has that sort of photorealism, whereas very few things look like a film noir, but with like black and white sketches.
Yeah, but the whole idea for Genesis Noir, it's a noir adventure set against the Big Bang.
That's pretty cool. Hopefully it's better than the last noir game that I played on, which L.A. Noir, which, oh no.
Again, it's a game where the art direction just sells it, that Genesis Noir. You just look at it and you go, that is the type of game that I want to see more of. That is the type of game that I want to play. So well done, Feral Cat Den.
I'm just distracted by how bad L.A. Noir is, I'm sorry.
I know. But Feral Cat Den, well done. You got our attention.
It was like the most detailed faces on top of bodies carved out of potato. That's what L.A. Noir was.
Yeah, exactly. Griftlands was a bit of an odd title. It felt like it was trying to be Borderlands, but as a card game.
Yeah, I don't know how that'll translate. It's a bold outlook and a bold style and a bold thing to do, but I don't know how it would work.
Yeah. There was some post-apocalyptic ones. The Last Oasis, just, I'm not sure what to make of that.
One Oasis was enough. We don't need any more.
The whole idea of it is that you can't really stay in one place. You have to...
Or your eyebrows will become sentient.
Well, it's a post-apocalyptic world, and
in which
everyone...
Liam and Noel Gallagher battle one each other to be the last Oasis. They have to chop each other's head off.
All I was going to say
fully
was,
powered Oasises.
Remember that movie, The Mortal Engines?
I was basically mocking a Highlander there, I'm sorry.
I know, but you remember The Mortal Engines?
Yeah, I don't remember it. I saw trailers, that's it.
Yeah, basically this is an MMO that... It kind of reminded me of The Mortal Engines, where you basically have to keep moving and moving around. It's a nomadic survival MMO, apparently.
Yeah, that doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I like the idea, but those things are a bit too demanding.
Yeah.
That's not really what I go into games for. I go for the
escapism.
Yeah. Something fantastical, escapism or sports or whatever.
Yeah. I play them for the same reason. Moving on. There were a few that were interesting, but I'm not really sure what to make. Remnant from the Ashes.
Again, they really need to hire somebody who could name stuff.
Yeah. Third-person survival action shooter set in a post-apocalyptic world overrun by monstrous creatures. As one of the last remnants of humanity, you'll set out alone or alongside up to two other survivors to face down hordes of deadly enemies and epic bosses and try to retake what was lost. Which sounds...
He wasn't reading the press release there, not at all.
No. It sounds generic as hell.
But?
That's it. It just sounds generic as hell.
So you decided to highlight a generic as hell one?
No, I'm saying that it got a lot of coverage, but I don't know why.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
Because...
But seriously, you play as a shark. How cool is that?
Maneater actually had the devs on stage at the PC Game Show, and I love the fact that they brought the devs for Maneater out onto the stage. A few others.
There's some cool cats who made that game.
Yeah, a few others, though. Starmancer, you mentioned, is one that you like the look of.
Which one was Starmancer again?
Theme Hospital in Space.
Oh! That's all I need to say.
Yeah, it's basically a colony builder.
It's Theme Hospital in Space! How cool is that?
Well, it's not Theme Hospital. It's a space station sim.
No, it's not. But it has that aspect to it. And it has that sort of art style to it, too.
Yeah. It's, you know...
And that's also what I really like, you know, because EA... I think it was Bullfrog. EA bought Bullfrog.
Yeah.
It killed Bullfrog and then stopped making Bullfrog games. So it's up to independent developers to be inspired by what they grew up playing and make it. But
yeah.
This is like Theme Hospital, but expanded out in every conceivable way.
Yeah.
And in space.
You basically design your station, manage your colonists, and fight off pirates. And
cool is that?
What's not to like about that?
Theme Hospital in space. Oh, yeah, boy. Daddy's coming home.
I'll tell you, there was one...
Yes, I just said Daddy's coming home. Yes.
There was one that really got my attention. It's called Ancestors, and the full title is Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey. It's being developed by Panache Digital Games. And the whole idea of it is that it's a survival game from a third-person perspective, but you control a member of an ape clan right at the beginning of human evolution.
That could be intriguing. It's very much a you type of game.
Well, this is the thing. How you evolve depends on your actions, your behaviours, things like that. And I like the idea of that. I like the idea of playing through evolution.
I mean, it's very clear that we're very different types of gamers. I'm amazed that there's a shark game. Rob likes evolving stuff.
Yeah, well, I like games where crafting is a thing. So obviously I'm going to like games where things change over time.
Mm. But I think that's everything, isn't it?
Not quite. Hold your horses, mate. Hold your horses.
There's horses in this too.
Yeah. One last one that I want to mention is Songs of Conquest. Right.
Okay.
Turn-based game. You build a kingdom, raise armies, control powerful magicians called wielders, quest around for loot, that sort of thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those games where it's inspired a lot by Might and Magic.
Oh.
You know, Might and Magic and Total War are the inspirations for Songs of Conquest. And that, as soon as I saw Might and Magic and Total War are the two inspirations for this, I thought, I'm going to play this game.
Okay. But does it have sharks?
It may do. You know, it might have sharks with frickin' lasers.
Oh, you've ruined it now. I think that's a good point to end. But that wraps up our E3 coverage.
Yep.
It'll be back to a more regularly scheduled Press X.
Yep.
Until next time, do comment below, subscribe, kick that notification bell. If other channels can smash it, we can kick it. But this has been Press X. We have been The Geek Show. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
This has been a very long episode, so I'll keep this brief. Just a thank you for listening to this extended edition of Press X. Check us out on social media, TGS_TheGeekShow at Twitter. Search it, The Geek Show on Instagram. And search for The Geek Show on Facebook. Until next time, though, when it'll be much more concise. I think it's half an hour. Thank you very much for listening. I have been Rob, and Rob was also here. And see you next time.